Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. I am excited about today's interview. This is a special program. So if you're listening to this on the Lickin' On Lending download website, wherever the podcast, wherever you may be listening to it, you are listening to a special program. This is an interview with Jonathan Corr. I had a chance to catch up with him. Very excited to share this with you. So without further ado, let's get into the interview that I recorded just a short time ago with Jonathan Corr.
Folks, we are very fortunate to have Jonathan Corr of Ellie Mae joining us. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Dave.
Jonathan, I had the privilege of being invited to participate and attend the conference, and also the real privilege of being invited to the chairman's dinner. I want to say thank you so much for that. One of the things that became so evident at the chairman's conference is Sig's heart and passion for this business. And then I heard about another passion he had, and that is for his wife. And anyone who knows anything what I'm about, it's family first. And I listened to a man talk in the most enduring terms about his recently deceased wife. And I got to tell you, it touched me. It touched everyone at our table, and I think it moved the whole audience. Talk to about that. A lot of us haven't seen that side of Sig.
Now, Sig is an amazing individual with an amazing heart, you know, founded this company. And we can talk a little bit about the culture and values, but, you know, Susan was right by his side. You know, they were married for over 52 years. She was a very special part of Ellie Mae. I knew her well. I've been with the company 15 years. You know, Sig, Susan, I mean, so many people in Ellie Mae are like family to me, but it was very hard for Ellie Mae with that loss, and it was, you know, pretty devastating for Sig. So, you know, I give him tremendous kudos to be able to, you know, share and talk and, you know, not shed a tear on the stage, because I know it's been very tough for him, but I was very glad that he was able to share his love and his passion and some stories about Susan, because she was very, very special.
Well, it really showed a side of Sig that, you know, quite honestly, I wish I had gotten to know earlier. I've always respected Sig. I look at the success you guys have had, and I've seen the vision. I've known Sig for, gosh, as long as he's had that, even before. And I've always admired the vision and his ability to lead and go through some difficult times. And you guys have gone through it. So we all have. Anytime you have a growth story, whether it be, you know, a long history, 15 years or 52 years of marriage, there's always those tough spots at times. So I really was blessed to listen to his story and his love for his family. But I was also amazed at the culture that I sensed and experienced as I met so many Ellie Mae employees. And I can't tell you the number of the ones that introduced themselves to me, Erica being one of them. I mean, went out of her way to come across and introduce herself and talk about, you know, is everything going fine? Are you here? Did you get everything settled? I mean, the concern that is there amongst the group for the customers and for those of us who are guests was very, very impressive. I want to talk about your culture, the company at your culture, or the culture at your company. It is it's something that's exemplary, and I think the audience needs to hear that not only are you an industry leader and a technology leader in the mortgage industry, but also you should be recognized for this culture. What brought that about, Jonathan?
Thank you for the compliment and the insight. It really is. It's been key, without a question, to our success. You know, I talk about, you know, we've been doing quarterly meetings as many years as we've been here. I've only been here 15, so the company's been here 18. But every quarter we do a quarterly meeting. We do a monthly virtual town halls, and we talk about a couple things, you know, two things that really are key to our success and have been something that Sig really instituted when he started the company. And, you know, when I joined a couple few years later, you know, I embraced and we've grown the company along that path. One is, you know, everybody knows kind of, you know, we have this vision to automate, everything automatable in the mortgage industry and,
right.
and really streamline the process from the consumer to the investor. And so I think it's important, you know, that you have a vision, you have a North Star that people know they can rally around, they know what their purpose is. And,
yes.
you know, and you stay true to it, you stay razor focused. But then hand in hand with that, so that discipline to stay focused is, you know, what kind of environment you create to deliver on that. And it kind of, in many ways, Zig has said in the past, and, you know, I continue to say it, you know, we're a high tech company with old fashioned values. And old fashioned values meaning just good quality values. First thing, first and foremost, why we're in business, right, is to make our customers successful, to basically listen to them, to, you know, hear what their challenges are. We know that we can never do everything perfect. Nobody can, but that we're so in tune with having an open ear, listening to our customers, being responsive, and committed to delivering great products and services that lets them do their job better, which is, you know, doing loans for American consumers. That is our reason to be. And, you know, when you step back, you say that seems very basic, but, you know, when you talk about it continuously and, you know, when you see kind of as you interacted with many of our teammates at the conference and you got that sense, that experience with Erica asking you, you know, is everything okay? Do you need anything? You know, that's how we want to make our customers and partners feel, because that's what allows us to be successful. And the next thing we know is that, you know, the only way you do that, the only way you can do that, I mean, we're a software company. We have very few physical assets. You know, I'll kid my IT guys about all the stuff in our multiple data centers, but fundamentally, our assets are our people, right?
Yes.
And so they're the ones that are going to deliver on the great products, the great service, you know, customer service, implementation, training, education, everything. They're the ones that are going to deliver that. So we need to create an environment where, you know, they feel great. They feel they're in an open, honest environment, collaborative. People care about each other. They're constructive. They don't always agree. If you have everybody always agreeing, you can't really innovate and push things forward.
Yeah.
But, you know, they work well together, and we support them by creating, you know, we're so focused on creating an environment where they feel great about what they're doing. And so this idea of a caring environment, a supportive environment, really is who we are. And, you know, you can see that even carry out into how we give back to the community through our LE Cares program. I mean, that
I
is,
love,
you know,
that,
kind of,
yeah.
It's kind of giving back. I mean, if you, you know, you were at a conference this year and you got to see, you know, the Build-A-Bear that we were doing for the local, you know, children and some of the hospitals, et cetera. We've been doing that every year at our conference, and we've done it for different charities, and we do all kinds of that stuff here in our local communities, whether it be in Pleasanton or, you know, in our local offices throughout the country, because, you know, we feel fortunate. You know, we care. We care about each other. We care about our customers, and we want to give back. Again, those are, you know, foundational old-fashioned values. One last one, which is kind of unique in the software business, is that unlike many technology companies, we actually make money. But,
novel concept.
But I think that becomes the bottom line. I mean, that becomes like the result of everything. And so it's you do these things, and again, nobody's perfect. We all have, you know, bumps and bruises along the way. We're always figuring out how we can be better, how we can do more for our customers, how we can work more effectively inside the company. That really goes back to, you know, kind of the entrepreneurial spirit, caring spirit that Sig brought to the table. And that as we've kind of evolved and, you know, I joined and we brought on more teammates and we continue to do that. Now we're over 1,100 employees.
Wow.
Is to, you know, just keep finding those kind of people that want to be part of that environment. And, you know, you do that and you do some things right, you're smart, you execute, but you have a healthy organization. You know, that's where the magic comes from.
Yeah. And I think you talked about bumps and bruises along the way. We're seeing interest rates rising. We're seeing many companies having their volumes, at least, you know, some of it's seasonality. We watched a nice rally in rates here recently, so we're anticipating volumes to come back up. But talk about how you guys are adjusting in a SaaS model to these adjustments. I mean, as whether it comes to staffing, there seems to be a sense of you have held on to employees at different cycles. That's a real strong statement to the marketplace. I used to have a software company. It was a competitor. She, after I sold my interest, she went to work for you guys and was there and retired from your company. Always spoke so well about through those cycles, you hold on to people. We have gone through a little bit of a downturn as far as volume is concerned. We're seeing now some encouraging evidence that the pipelines are starting to fill up again. But how do you look at that as you're running this company? How do you see that, and how do you manage to those various volume levels, Jonathan?
There's a couple things. The fundamental driver of our growth, you know, over the last, let's say, 6-7 years since we came out of the meltdown and the beginning of the recession, you know, the market has been up and down a number of times along the way. The fundamental thing that's been driving our growth really has nothing to do with loan volume. You know, it's that the market is embracing software as a service. They're seeing the benefit in total cost of ownership. They're seeing the benefit in allowing a company to make the investments for them to deal with, you know, the challenges around security and scalability, et cetera. You've got people embracing automation. I mean, we're not where I think we ultimately will be, but the speed of people embracing automation has, you know, continued to increase. You know, a lot of this has been driven by, you know, folks really understanding they got to put together a quality asset. Obviously, some aspects relative to regulation, kind of a secular trend towards, you know, embracing automation. So as we have been successful, both across the spectrum, all the way from small to mid-sized lenders, all the way up to some of the largest, you know, regional banks and non-banks in the country. And as we've been successful on different types of lenders, right? You know, both the non-banks, the mortgage banks, as well as banks, credit unions, community banks, regional banks, it's become a very virtuous cycle. So we're growing by more and more people embracing our software and our solutions. And then as we go forward, and I know that, you know, I don't know if you got a chance to, you know, see the study from Jordan Brown from MarketWise Advisors, you know, the ROI on solutions that we bring to bear continue to go up as a customer uses it more and more, and as they use more and more products. So, you know, what's happening with us is our customers are wanting to do more with Ellie Mae. They're wanting to do more services across the network. So our fundamental underlying growth in the business is north of 30%. And then you add in, okay, we will have some impact on the business, whether you've got a tailwind from volume going up or a bit of a headwind from volume coming down, but it only affects a portion of the revenues. You know, much of the revenues are seat-based, so, you know, they're not affected by volume. So that's how we're able to do that. But how do we manage to it? Well, obviously, we manage to it just the way many of our customers do. We think about, you know, what the volume is going to do, and that's going to influence, you know, as a public company, you know, how we make our investments, how we guide the public markets in terms of what our revenue growth will be, our profitability. We're also very in tune with, you know, where our customers are. So, you know, most of our customers have been expecting, you know, refis to dwindle for a long time. Last year was a, you know, an extra bit of a juice in the market. And I won't tell you who, but many of our customers, you know, confided in me and said, God, we got to slow this down. This is too much right now. And yeah, and the reason they said that is because they had already tooled themselves to be ready for a purchase market. So they were already kind of in a place where their staff was expecting, you know, a purchase market that will grow at a steady rate, not big jumps in refi. So they were stretching themselves. So we actually see most of our customers are kind of like, that's what they've been ready for. You know, we have exceptions, right, in terms of guys that were very refi-centric. But, you know, guys are ready for the purchase market. The purchase market is projected to grow another 10% this year. That was MBA's latest numbers yesterday. They actually raised, I think, originations for the year to about $1.6 trillion. And the projection is going forward, you know, we're going to see a steady growth in the purchase market, which I think is a great thing for the economy, consumers, our lenders, because, you know, now we can really think about how we, you know, worry less about regulation and really focus on innovation. how do we help our customers, you know, really drive down time to close a loan, the cost of closing a loan, to create a better consumer experience, to differentiate themselves as it makes sense to their different borrowers. That's, you know, that's what we're focused on. So we're growing. We started the year, I guess, a little under 1,100 employees, maybe 1050, 1060. You know, we'll probably end the year over 1,300.
Wow.
And that's because we're still growing. You know, we're not growing, you know, revenue-wise the same we did last year. Last year, we grew a bit over 40%. You know, this year, we've guided the market that will grow in the low 20%, but still grow. And just for all the reasons I said.
Let's talk about the growth. Let's talk about the future and get the vision that you're seeing. You guys have automated many of the processes, but it's taken a long time to automate the entire process. Why is that? I mean, you're covering a lot, but there's still more ground to gain. Talk about the struggles in that and, you know, what you're envisioning automating here in the near future that your customers can look at and your prospects look forward to.
I think, you know, historically, you know, up till I'll say maybe the last half dozen years, you know, it was almost like, you know, arguing the automation argument was a nice to have, right? And, you know, as costs really exploded, as folks realized they had to create, you know, high quality assets that investors weren't going to accept mistakes, that buybacks were a reality, not just a document that nobody enforced, that, you know, regulation was out there, people started having to throw bodies at the problem. And so what they did is, you know, really out of a focus on survival and profitability, people started embracing automation. And, you know, so we've actually seen great progress there. But, you know, we haven't seen as much in the way of, you know, the consumer experience. And I think that's because so many people were just so focused on dealing with the regulatory environment.
Yes.
Over the last few years. Now people are ready to go off and do that, and the market wants that. Consumers want to, you know, have a greater amount of control of the experience. You know, what we like to talk about is they want high tech, but they still want high touch. They still want to be able to engage. I don't care whether they're a Gen X, a Gen Y, a millennial. Everybody wants to engage the boomers with a lender, especially the millennials. They've never done this transaction, and it's a big emotional transaction. It's very complex. I mean, no matter how you slice it, lots of regulatory aspects. You know, I'm getting a home. It's kind of it's a big deal. It's American dream. And so they want to touch somebody, but they want to call the shots. So you want to provide technology and capabilities to let them do that. And so that's where I think we're seeing lots of innovation around the consumer side of things. We're also seeing innovation where people are getting comfortable with putting in a credential or two to pull information from different income and asset services and deposit services. So, you know, you get to put all this stuff together more seamlessly for the consumer. So I think there's a lot of things, a lot of innovations happening there. It's very exciting. Also, a lot of innovations around, you know, people being able to do it on different form factors, right? Whether they want this to do the smartphone. And not everything makes sense on a smartphone, right? It's too small for a lot of things. But
right.
A tablet, right, or a laptop, you know, so that's where we're seeing exciting things. We're seeing exciting things around, you know, the front end of digital signing. That's happening.
Do you think that's a reality in the near future, the digital mortgage really fully digital? Are we going to be there soon?
I think we will see aspects of the digital mortgage or what I'll start to say. People used to call it the e-mortgage, which was everything in the back end. I think what we're going to see is, you know, people are getting very comfortable. Almost all disclosures, all that stuff is done electronically now. And so that was kind of the thing to get people familiar and comfortable with it. I think people are comfortable enough in many cases to do electronic closings in terms of some of that process. And actually, the regulation in terms of delivering electronic documents ahead of time for people to review, et cetera, you know, even though it's a regulation now, it's actually a best practice. So it's
it
a
is.
Good thing. You'll see that aspect of things. I still think it's going to take time for full e-notes and then e-recording and those aspects of things. And part of that goes to, you know, whether warehouse lenders, especially in the non-bank scenarios, are ready to deal with the e-notes. And much can be said also in terms of the process around recording and, you know, where the counties are, because, you know, although there's great companies that are innovating things in that area to help that, there's still a lot of counties that operate like they did in George Washington's day.
That's so true.
It's going to take us some time there, you know. So, but I think, you know, we're going to see lots of progress. And I think it's very exciting. You know, there's some things we're doing around, you know, title and closing. That's one area that really hasn't gotten really very electronic yet. And part of it, I think, is we all wanted all these people to leave their software and to go to a portal to do things between the closing agents and the loan officers and the underwriter, all these people. You know what? You know, when you force somebody out of the place that they operate, it's very difficult to drive adoption. So we've taken a very different approach there. We've started talking, and you've probably seen some of the announcements of things we've announced with some of the title software companies. You know, we're working on some stuff that really connects the title and closing agents right from within their software seamlessly to folks working on Encompass right within their software, and it all kind of goes back and forth automatically. And that's what the excitement's about. I mean, I think back to the early days of Ellie Mae when I first got here and, you know, I first conceived of what is Encompass. And, you know, we went out and part of it was we had the network, the EPAS network, and we thought all people would go to the network, right, you know, out of their LOS software. And they wouldn't, right?
No.
You know, and so we had to bring those together. You had to bring them together like chocolate and peanut butter, like, you know, Reese's peanut butter cup. And that's kind of what we did with, you know, Encompass and with the network. And Encompass was, you know, a different way of thinking about things. We said, you know what, we're going to deliver software that is just such a great experience that people will come to it and then we'll be able to facilitate the transaction. And that's what we're going to be trying to do on the closing side as well. We're not doing all of those elements right now. There's many partners involved. But, you know, that's what I think you have to do. You've got to create a better experience. It's got to be better than the way things are now.
Agreed.
Right? For someone to go electronic.
The millennials are entering the marketplace. Already 35% of all first-time home buyers are millennials. We're seeing that just as the tip of the iceberg. We know there's just an onslaught of millennials entering the housing market. How do you think this is going to change the industry, and specifically how Ellie Mae services that first-time home buyer?
You know, everybody kind of talks about the millennials like they're this kind of alien beast.
That's true.
You know, and they're very different. Well, you know, they are in many ways, right? Very much this, you know, technology-first, mobile-first experience. So I think any lender that is going to be out there doing business has got to create a situation where they give the flexibility to their consumers. And that consumer is going to be obviously more and more the millennials. And some millennials, you know, it's actually interesting. Some don't start everything online. But you've got to give them the ability to make the decisions as to when and where they want to engage. You know, make it accessible and make it accessible all the time. And you have to be very responsive. They expect when they hit you with something, right, that you're going to respond very quickly. So it's almost like you have to think about the way you're just servicing your consumer in a much more 24/7, any type of device, anytime. And that's actually good for all customers. And so I think, you know, for us, we're going to be providing the technology and the different tools for our lenders to do exactly that with their consumers, with the borrowers, with the millennials. But the interesting thing, as I said earlier, and we just did a huge amount of research around this, invariably, you know, millennials want to engage with a advisor, you know, and I use the word loan advisor as opposed to officer. They want someone to help them, to guide them. This is a big emotional transaction. So the beauty of it all is, you know, for lenders that embrace technology and create that experience, it gives them more bandwidth to be that great consultant, spend that time with the millennials, spend that time with their real estate partners, and create that kind of ecosystem, if you will. And so we're very, very focused on that. That's the front end of the application process, right? The back end is still, a lot of it's going to get, we're going to start to see more use of automated ordering and using intelligence to drive the process in a more efficient fashion, you know, get the time to get a loan closed down from maybe where it is in the industry, you know, or at least on our platform, you know, in the 40, 45 days, down to 30, down to 20, down to 10. I mean, we see paths to do that in terms of technology and some of the innovations that are happening that I think Fannie and Freddie will be involved with, and other lender and other investors. Still a lot of work and heavy lifting back there. But the idea is to, you know, basically shield that from the consumer. and make that front-end experience really fantastic. And then, you know, it's going to take – there's a long pole there. I mean, the fact is appraisal is still a long way from where I think it needs to be. We don't have a lot of appraisers out there. There's a lot of innovation happening. Talk about the closing. That has work. We, you know, recording has to get there. There's a lot of aspects. But I think we're going to see progress in all those areas. And where we are, we're actually involved with customers, lenders, and lots of partners. I mean, a lot of the folks that were at the user experience in Vegas are partners that are a key part of our network and what we're doing on the platform.
I was amazed at the number of partners you had there. Talk about the rollback of regulations and the impact it's going to have on our business.
I do not see a full rollback in regulation. I don't see Dodd-Frank being repealed and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau disappearing. I think it's a negotiating tactic initially. You know, anybody can go off and, you know, read the analysis, you know, look at some of the positions that some of the congressmen and senators are taking that are, you know, whether it be the Financial Choice Act or, you know, some of the stuff that Carafa was working on. It's not a complete rollback. It's more a modification, maybe a more transparency, maybe more even-handedness. I don't think anybody on either side of the aisle wants to see us in a situation where consumers aren't protected, right?
Exactly.
We want to make sure consumers are protected, that nobody exploits them. So there has to be some level of regulation. We also want to make sure that, you know, we don't have people really being bad actors and fraud and doing things like that. Nobody wants that. What I think everybody wants to see, again, is greater credit availability for, you know, many of the consumers that, you know, a lot of this regulation was meant to protect, right? And so when you get into, you know, how some of this regulation comes across, it's not, unfortunately, it's not clear enough to lenders when they do non-QM loans, right? You know, really, what are the repercussions if you make a mistake? Not if you're a bad actor. Let's forget about that, because you're a bad actor, someone should throw the book at you, right, and, you know, take you out back. But you know, if you're trying to do something and you're trying to come up with innovation, right, and come up with something that's not, you know, standard QM product, standard Fannie Freddie, conventional FHA, you know, how do you do it? How do you measure, how do you determine what the risk is, right? As a lender, it's underwriting risk. But if you don't know whether the penalty is going to be, because it really hasn't been laid out there, you're going to stay away from it. Any clarity there would be a good thing. I know people are talking about maybe some loosening around the debt to income ratio, which would maybe make things, you know, a little looser. I think folks would love to see, you know, a commission versus maybe power in the hand of a single individual. And I think all those things, which are really compromises, they're making it so that it's a little clearer what the enforcement is, what it is if you make a mistake, if you do something incorrect. It will allow lenders to broaden that credit that they have out there. It's going to help more consumers get into first-time homes. I think it'll be great across the board for everyone, including our customers and Ellie Mae.
Sounds like you're fairly bullish about the overall housing market and specifically Ellie Mae's contribution to the housing finance system.
We are. I mean, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, refi was nice back there, et cetera. But when the market is driven by refi, it's not a healthy market, right? I mean,
that's right.
You know, what drives residential finance should be, you know, growth in the economy, people buying homes for the first time, moving up, you know, a growing economy is what you want. And in that kind of market, the purchase market, it should be 70-75% of all lending. And I think we're on our way there as we are in 17. And most of the outlooks that we see, we talked about the millennials and how really we're hitting the first part of that group. I mean, that group is 18 to 35.
Yep.
You know, folks in their 30s, right, they took longer, right? They took longer maybe because they had student debt and, you know, taking longer for life events, et cetera. But it's happening. I mean, we're seeing it across the country. And yet the biggest part of that population is 25 or 26 right now. So that's going to start building up as we go forward with a lot of the things. You know, I'm optimistic about the economy in general. There's, you know, lots of different things being debated. But, you know, it's good to see the Fed raising rates. You know, they're seeing, you know, things that seem to be healthy, you know. And when I talk to our customers, what's exciting for me is they are talking about focused on, you know, the consumer and a better experience and, you know, driving down cost and driving down time and embracing innovation. That's exciting. And so that's what kind of gives me that positive feeling.
Ellie Mae is already touching one third of all residential mortgages in the U.S. How do you continue to grow that? I mean, you already have a significant market share.
Yeah, you know, we're probably just slightly under that, maybe about 30%. It's an interesting thing. As we've had more success, it's just like a virtuous cycle. So, you know, the more success we have in different segments, I actually, you know, believe it's been easier and easier for us to pick up different size customers and different types of lenders. And so, you know, it's not easy by any means. You got to go in there, you got to prove yourself. We take as you noticed at our conference, we take a very partnership-oriented approach to business. I don't know if that's unique, but a lot of people don't. And, you know, it really is about, you know, not a transaction, but a long-term relationship and making our customers successful. So, I continue to see growth for us along that vector. But the other vector for growth for us, which is, you know, a larger vector, is that, yes, we touch 30% of the market, but, you know, our customers are in different stages of embracing our current technologies, utilizing our B2B network, utilizing some of the different services we bring to bear, like our CRM capabilities and our pricing service and our AllRegs capabilities and other things that we've introduced. And so, one, you know, we're introducing those things, and all those things have been things that, you know, our customers have asked for over the years. So, you know, I see a path to continue to introduce new capabilities that, as we get, you know, obviously, you know, drive more efficiency for our customers, either, you know, help them drive more loans or drive, you know, the cost of lending down, you know, we're able to, you know, benefit, you know, a small degree from the economic savings. And so that is probably, you know, the bigger part of the growth opportunity as we go into the future. I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of work still left of automating everything between the consumer and the investor. You know, it's gonna take me a few more years anyway.
Jonathan, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you today, David.
Folks, we've had Jonathan Corr, who's President and Chief Executive Officer at Ellie Mae, joining us. We appreciate him and encourage you to check out their website and learn more about this outstanding product.
Their website is elliemae.com. Again, this has been David Licken with a special broadcast, an interview with Jonathan Corr of Ellie Mae. Very interesting. If you want to download this, you can go to the Licken on Lending website. You can listen to it there. You can also listen to this podcast on your iPhone or on Google, on your Google phone through Google Play. Many ways to access this and listen to it. I encourage you to share it with others. I appreciate you taking time to dial in, be a part of it. Be sure to check out our podcast, a regular podcast, on Mondays at noon Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Look forward to having you back, and we appreciate many of you who are our listeners. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to talking with you next Monday.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.